example, that a virus might kill a statistically significant portion of a certain group in the population, the truth or lie about what that virus is irrelevant. If it is demonstrable, then it is demonstrable. The actions taken against that virus, though, are very relevant, since those can be controlled. And when someone decides that the things surrounding this environment, the things surrounding the control and the effort to eliminate such a virus, those can be detrimental to the long-term survival of a nation, of an entire world, even. More so than the virus itself. So whether or not SARS-2, the virus that causes the disease known as COVID-19, is real, fake, manufactured in Wuhan, or whatever, the fact of the matter is that the government have commissioned a number of large companies to produce vaccine, and now have started to make those vaccines into law. The vaccines themselves are suspicious and have been from the beginning. The red tape, at least in the United States, surrounding vaccine production should take at least 18 months. And a vaccine begins, the beginning of creating a vaccine is identifying the virus that causes the disease in the first place. In this case, that would be SARS-2. Once they find it, they have to identify the most effective method of combating that virus. Now, traditional vaccines have used broken versions of the virus. They basically take functional viruses, they breed them until they have a very substantial quantity, and then they deliberately destroy the viruses, often through cooking or chemical means, so that they are harmless, but still identifiable by your biology. The portions of the vaccine are then floated through your bloodstream once injected, and your immune system attacks them, identifying them, and from there, it learns how to better combat the virus when it encounters a live version in the future. The current vaccine is experimental both in production and in its actual design, because rather than using the traditional method of creating live viruses and then destroying them, it's creating portions of the virus in your body. The messenger RNA vaccines have a very serious flaw that no one I've seen has talked about. Even people who have been questioning the vaccine, so-called anti-vaxxers, haven't pointed this issue out. So, I'll walk you through the full process of how these vaccines work, how they're supposed to work, and why they pose a very serious threat to your health. First step is that the vaccine is introduced as a vaccine itself, which it is not. As I mentioned before, vaccines are designed to introduce something into your blood that will provoke your immune response. Instead, this provokes the cells in your body to produce those things. This is actually called mRNA therapy. It has potential long-term treatment possibilities, but also has very dangerous potentials, because messenger RNA, when introduced into your body using the method which allows it to be introduced without causing a massive amount of inflammation, which can be extremely dangerous, enters your cells. Now, the mRNA can't enter your nucleus. There are various methods in place in your cells themselves that prevent messenger RNA from going into your DNA. The DNA transcribes RNA, which is called reverse RNA, which leaves the nucleus and is then turned into messenger RNA by reversing the transcription again. The messenger RNA cannot go back the other way. Only amino acids can enter the nucleus. So then, that is not a serious threat. What is a serious threat, though, is the very real possibility that the messenger RNA can produce something that your body might react poorly to. So let's assume every step of the process for this mRNA vaccine works exactly as advertised. When the coronavirus infects your body, it does so using a form of homeostasis. You see the actual micelle surrounding the virus is composed of the membrane of a previously live cell. When the mRNAs produce all those proteins for the virus inside the cell, they float to the surface of the cell. And once it's been saturated with so many proteins, it destabilizes the structure and it basically pops like a bubble. A random number of the bubbles contain the appropriate mRNA to create new vaccines. Enough, since it's been reproducing so much inside your cell, that a single virus infecting a single cell can result in several thousand viruses going out. This is how it propagates. It uses the fact that the number of proteins on the outside of the shell are attracted to cells that have no proteins on the outside, in much the same way that salt moves from an area of more salinity to an area of less salinity. So if you ever dry brined a steak by sprinkling salt on it, it first draws the water out, and then once it mixes completely, the steak then sucks all the water in. This is just the exact same thing, but using proteins on a membrane instead of utilizing the salt and water. Once that stasis is achieved, the cells merge with the virus itself, which automatically spews the mRNA into the cell. By preventing your body's natural responses from destroying free pieces of mRNA in your system, the virus, the vaccine allows the mRNA to enter your cell directly. The issue is that it uses the same channels, producing proteins that then attach to the outside of your cells. It does not create proteins that then float around your blood system the way that a normal vaccine does. They stay attached to the cell that produced them. There are a few million mRNA strands within each vaccine, and they produce 10 to 100 times more proteins than there are. They produce 10 to 100 proteins per strand, which means that each injection will kill, ideally, the way they designed it, should kill a few thousand of your cells. This is a relatively small amount, a gram or so of muscle mass, and should result in soreness in your muscle, in your arm. Now let's assume everything that they want to happen happens. But that's the exact way it works, and there's no other unexpected side effect. There's still the expected side effect. They know that your immune system will then attack the cells containing those proteins. Once they're sticking on the outside, they are a target for your immune system. It provokes an autoimmune response, treating your entire cell as if it is a virus. That's why they inject it in your muscle mass, so that all the injection stays in one spot and only affects the muscle cells in that one area. If the vaccine were to go into your main bloodstream, you would have tens of thousands to possibly millions of mRNA strands entering all sorts of random cells in your body. They would be infected, they would respond the exact same way the vaccine designs them to, so they produce proteins that then stick to the outside and are treated by your immune system like a foreign agent. The obvious issue with this is it means that a poorly administered vaccine, even if everything else works the way they want it to, it simply applying the vaccine poorly, hitting a vein or an artery so that it goes in and just spreads throughout your whole body, means that the vaccine, the mRNA treatment, can enter any cell in your body, your heart, your organs, your brain, infect them, and then a body begins attacking it. This can result in inflammation, swelling, and potential issues with the pathways that your organs take. Depending on the sensitivity of different organs, it can result in death. Large-scale inflammation in your heart, for example, something that has been reported as a side effect, as your immune system attacks cells in your heart that are producing these proteins. The same thing happens if you have a baby, because the vaccine can travel through the bloodstream and enter the baby itself through the placenta. Now, the placenta is supposed to protect against pretty much everything so that you don't accidentally infect the baby. But certain types of molecules, like mRNA, can enter the baby's body. And when that happens, the mother's immune system gets overprotective and begins attacking the baby. This is why a lot of people with autoimmune diseases have to be careful while having children, because it will do far more damage to that infant, especially if you get injected during the early stages where there are far less cells and they can be affected far more. You'd see this in damage that would come up as blotches. The way that birthmarks, for example, work is a single cell very early on mutates its pigment. As the baby grows, that one specific cell that mutated becomes tens of thousands or millions of cells with distorted pigment. The larger the birthmark, the earlier in the process the mutation happened. Same thing can happen with damage. If there's even a few thousand cells damaged within a fetus early enough on, which isn't that many cells, your hand contains billions of cells, but early enough on, that can cause massive damage and birth defects. These are very obvious issues with the mRNA, quote, vaccine, where they should have never been used in the first place in this manner. Deliberately introducing something in your body that will cause your immune system to attack its own cells is reckless. If it was going to be used for anything, it should have been used in the vaccine production. The proteins should have been extracted from whatever they used to make them, and that should have been the vaccine, since the end goal was to simply create the proteins in the first place.
Now, I don't want to interrupt, because you've got a good flow going, but I want to touch more on to that part you mentioned.
Anyway.
So I want to go back to the mention that misapplying the vaccines, doing a poor job and giving the people the shots, is going to wind up probably killing them. Because
there's a chance of killing them. The problem is that the chance of getting a poor injection grows with the number of people injected. And
right.
The odds of that infecting and killing them depends entirely on their health scenario in the first place. However, that's the exact issue with COVID, that if you have pre-existing health conditions, it can kill you. If you have pre-existing health conditions, so can the vaccine. But go on.
Right. I was going to mention, though, that they want to use military personnel to apply the vaccines. And the military is notorious for using substandard medical practices to apply vaccines. My own father has a personal experience with this where he was trying to get the vaccination done there at the military while he was in service. And they just have a normal recruit go up and try it because they have so many that they have to process a day. They don't have just the time to do the specified nurses to apply it. because they figure it's just a needle you put in the arm, you're good to go. So we have potential here of something kind of disastrous going if they use military personnel to try and apply it wide scale.
You are absolutely correct. If you don't understand the mechanism behind the vaccine, you might ignore the effect itself. The whole purpose of jabbing someone in the side of the arm is to hit them inside a dense muscle group where the vaccine will not escape. But if you do this, the muscle groups can be separated, and it might be easier to stick somebody in between two muscle groups where it can escape. If you don't know the reason you're sticking someone where you're sticking them, you might very well decide to stick them elsewhere. And I know exactly what you're talking about. People in the military very often will simply, you know, oh, good enough, you got him in the side of the arm, it's a needle, you don't, you know, it's not rocket surgery, but it very much, these are the kinds of things that need to be explained to people, and no one wants to explain it because the government doesn't want you to know. That's not even a conspiracy, you know, theory, tinfoil hat crazy shit. They openly state in many of these undercover interviews, they don't want you to talk about that kind of stuff because it's, quote, fear-mongering. But it's like a legitimate concern about a medical process is something you need to know about. It's like telling people, it's like trying to say, well, you shouldn't tell people that, that if you go into an MRI with metal in your body, you'll pop like popcorn. You'll die horribly depending on where those pieces of metal are, but most people don't have metal embedded in their bodies. So as a result, you decide not to tell everyone since it's only a small portion of people who are going to endure it anyway. It's like, even if it's a tiny portion of people who have a problem with a medical procedure, everyone should know just in case. You know, even what if, for example, you have a bullet in your body. You got shot when you were younger, and you never bothered to go to the hospital because it was just 22 round. Then later on in your life, you know, they're looking through your medical history. You have no medical history of any metal in your body, so they don't tell you, they don't mention to you that the MRI can kill you because that bullet is lodged in just the right place, where when the MRI turns on, it goes straight through your heart. You didn't know that. The doctor didn't know that. But if the doctor had told you that, you could have said something. It's the same thing with this treatment. They know, the people who made this know, that if it was injected improperly, it could kill somebody. It could cause blood clotting. It could cause inflammation. It could cause all sorts of things. They don't want you to know because they don't want to scare people, because they want everyone to take the jab. They're so determined, and it's so strange. They don't put this much pressure into the flu, and it's killed an insane number of people every year. And I know it's, well, it's not the flu, and there's so many people who've killed from it, and blah, 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 and it's like, maybe the whole situation itself sucked. You know? Again, assuming everything you've heard on the news is true, the obviousness of this makes it strange that they wouldn't say something. Because they've always said something before. Flu vaccines, for example. You need the flu because the very young and the very, you need the vaccine because the very young and the very old are most affected by the flu. So if you're constantly surrounded by those people, you should get the vaccine so you don't hurt them. If you have immunity issues, you may not be able to take the vaccine. So they have alternate treatments where you can get antibodies from healthy people who have had the vaccine or the virus. For some reason, that's not an option here. They're not giving you the antibody treatment. They're not willing to give you the actual proteins. They want you, for some reason, to alter the protein synthesis within your own body, and they don't want you to at all question it. Even though, and this is true, the antibodies produced in your body for any given virus or foreign agent are extremely varied. There are multiple protein markers on the outside of SARS-2, for example, that your antibodies stick to. And once they do stick to it, that's how your immune system attacks and consumes it. The fewer antibodies on a foreign object, the longer it goes without being attacked. which increases your chance for infection. And as anybody can tell you, as you can probably see from some of these videos, that makes the vaccine less effective than simply catching the disease and recovering from it. So it's strange that they are so insistent on this less effective vaccine when there's probably an easier way to create it, especially since it has the same membrane that human cells are made of. If you introduce the right chemical into a batch of viruses, you can easily dissolve the membrane, killing the virus. You can then separate out the mRNA from the proteins and simply inject the proteins. This would be an effective vaccine. For some reason, no one pursued this. Everybody was so dedicated to injecting the mRNA. That is suspicious. I don't like it. And the thing that makes it even more suspicious is how authoritarian they're being about it. People are being accosted in the streets. They are being beaten. They are being deprived of their work. They are being treated, quite frankly, as bad as sex offenders. You go to a job and they're like, oh, we don't need your kind here. Why? Because I didn't get stuck. I'm in my early 20s. You're all in your early 20s. We're more likely to die from the vaccine than the virus, but for some reason, you are that determined to make sure I don't give you a virus that you're inoculated for. And then, of course, they come out every so often and tell you, well, it doesn't actually prevent the disease. It doesn't even prevent hospitalization. It doesn't prevent you from spreading it. It just makes it all a little less bad. I'm like, in that case, you've made a shitty vaccine, but for some reason, you are still dead set and determined on making sure everyone takes it. It is negatively affecting the economy itself. And, of course, the commies will always say, well, you can't breathe without your money and all this shit. But it's like, if the economy fails, you do realize that that is a physical representation of the labor that people do. The businesses that deliver your food, if they fail, there's no more businesses around you to deliver food. Where the fuck are you going to get your food from? You're going to go get a plot of land yourself? Half the country lives in cities. They would literally have to disperse throughout the country and just take land in order to farm for themselves. Truck drivers aren't getting parts because shipping companies aren't staffed well enough. And there are international trade issues right now going on. And instead of ramping up production and saying, okay, the vaccine's not nearly as important, they're trying to say, well, it's more important that you get vaccine than that the economy works. But if the economy fails, I need you to understand, over 200 million people are outside of the effective range to feed themselves. Half the country lives in the cities, and a large portion of the remaining people who don't live in cities still don't live anywhere that they can farm. They can't immediately go to a farm if the production chain breaks down. You are looking at people rioting in the streets. And I'm not talking Black Lives Matter rioting. I'm talking people burning down entire cities and then migrating out to the countryside where they will rob people for their food. Because that is what the United States is built on. It is built on the economy of scale. It is built on shipping across the country, across the globe, the whole thing. You can't just shut it down. The last year has seen a dramatic alteration in the way that the country works. A massive number of small businesses have died. The only ones that haven't are the biggest businesses who have been able to ride the whole thing out because of all the money that they have and that they're able to beg for from the government. The people who are refusing to go back to work are refusing to go back to work first because they're scared. And rightly so. It doesn't matter what you're scared of at this point. There's so many things. Maybe you don't want to catch the COVID, which the government has just driven into everyone's fucking head. Maybe you don't want to, kill someone related to you. Even if you think you'll be safe, maybe someone else won't be. The mask mandates, you know, if you have trouble, difficulty breathing, and they have mask mandates in your area, maybe you're worried that you'll at some point have an asthma attack and fall over at work. Any number of issues which are related to this, because of all the scaremongering, because of the chance that 2 to 5% of the population might succumb to this disease, instead of, from the very beginning, making sure that that specific portion of the population is protected, which is what we've always done with diseases, like the flu and stuff. If there's a major flu outbreak somewhere, they make sure that people in nursing homes aren't overwhelmed with it or something. Now, instead, they're literally grouping people in nursing homes together and making it to where they can't leave. People who have the disease are quarantined with people who definitely don't. So the number of people who die is cranked up in some areas. Then there's the fact that a lot of people will die horribly in car accidents, stabbings, suicide, any number of things. But their death is still ruled as coronavirus because maybe they had it in their blood, kind of. Then there's the PCR test. The test that they use to determine whether or not you have the virus, I might have quoted the wrong test on that, but the test you use to determine whether or not you have the virus has the specific chance of giving you false positives. It is very likely that when you've been tested and it came out as positive, that you may not have actually had the virus. Because the way that they test for it is they're looking for a certain physical and or chemical reaction of the, off the top of my head, antibodies in your blood. And when they do it, they have a certain number of cycles they run. Every time you cycle it, you get more and more accurate. You're looking for parts per million. So if, for example, you have 10 million parts, let's say you have a million parts. That would be 2 to the 20th to look for one portion. Every time you cycle through, it's about twice as accurate. So if you have a million parts and you cycle through 20 times, you're going to get an almost certain answer. Like, yeah, you probably almost certainly do or do not have it. They do 40 cycles. 40 cycles is like trying to find the diameter of the Earth by using the first 10,000 digits of pi. After a certain point, you're going to end up with a number that makes no sense. And the same thing is true here. If you just keep looking, you're going to eventually find something. A lot of people are testing positive who probably don't have it. They have no symptoms. They're not surrounded by anybody who has caught it and exhibited symptoms. There are people who live in houses with 6 other people who have tested positive. No one else in their house ever tests positive. But for somehow this is supposed to be a super contagious disease, though. Logically, everyone in the house should have it, but they never test positive for it. They are shutting down the country, fear-mongering, and you can see in countries like New Zealand and Australia why. It gives the government so much power, and it really is, in my opinion, indicative of moving everything towards restructuring the world so that they have full control. This is something that they've openly admitted to a certain degree, talking about the great restructuring to make sure that the economy is sustainable, but that's always been a blindside excuse to just take control of everything. And when the Bolsheviks took over, they were literally, we need to restructure the economy for the people. And that worked out great for tens of millions of people in Russia. Sarcasm, by the way.
Yep. But I want to touch a little bit more on how it's kind of this backwards logic. I know it has worked in the past, but it's just bizarre to think about that they ruin everything, crash everything, and somehow they think they come out on top and restructure everything. You would think that the people doing that to us would be the first ones that we would take out. But I know people don't tend to think in a panic, but you'd think that the ones saying, yeah, we're doing this to you, and we can see it leading to a crash, and whenever it crashes, we don't immediately turn on them, you would think. And instead they're like, oh, we'll have a solution for you to get out of this. Well, the solution that brought us to this point works so well, why are we listening to you?
Well, the concept of useful idiots applies here. There are useful idiots on the left and the right who are clearly indoctrinated to believe these things. The method of operation in the United States. So it's known as an oligarchy. It's ruled by a very specific class of people who cannot be questioned, overthrown, or anything. In the United States, this is made up of two groups, the government and the super wealthy, the really super wealthy. I'm not talking you won a few million dollars. I'm talking the kind of people who it just turned out were buying small countries to hide their wealth. This isn't too dissimilar from most places and throughout most of history, but in the United States, that's where I am. That's the overall idea. On the right, you have people who will defend to the death the wealth of the super billionaires. They earned it, they deserved it, it's theirs. And as a result, those people are allowed to do whatever they want to. Bill Gates is allowed to stick you with whatever many needles he wants, and Jeff Bezos is allowed to milk his people to the point of suicide, and that's totally okay. Then on the other side of that, you have the useful idiots on the left, the ones who say, trust everything the government says, big government good, yay. They'll celebrate, and they'll tell you to trust the science and everything because the government told them to. They've always wanted the big nanny state. Well, the big nanny state, and we can all agree on this, I think, is funded by these big companies. The constant cycle of people coming in and out of the government only to take positions in companies and vice versa. The constant flow of what are literally just bribes. I don't care if they call them lobbying or whatever, they're just straight up bribes. The purchasing of campaigns by large companies, it's so obvious that these people are working together, and yet for some reason everyone thinks of them as separate, and there's a group on either side who defends them. So when the shit hits the fan, both groups on either side are pointing to the other people. The left is all pointing at the rich, like, the rich are evil. The right's pointing at the government, saying, no, the government's evil. And it's like, do me a favor, round up every politician and every billionaire, put them in a blender, and actually do something that makes the world better. They don't, because their own partisan politics blind them to the truth. The people in power, no matter how they got that power, will do anything they can to keep it. In the last 2 years, the richest portion of the country has increased their wealth by almost $10 trillion. And that's almost exactly the amount of wealth that the bottom half of the country has lost. They know that small businesses are shutting down. Everyone's buying everything online, and guess who that goes through? That doesn't go through mom and pop, that goes through Amazon. Amazon, who makes no effort to improve because they know they can get away with whatever they want to. They have more money than God. Excuse me. Which means that they don't have to worry about anything that happens. And if the government tries to step in, they'll literally just buy them off and go away. Here's $10 million, fuck off. Because that's what they do. That's how they operate. And that's why they're fine with crashing the economy, because the economy only crashes to a certain extent. You know, the man on the cliff high above the water doesn't care if a tsunami takes out the town below him, because everybody's going to be paying him to repair their houses. So when the tsunami happens to come at a random time with no warning, and the guy on the hill happened to have purchased a giant boulder a few months before, you're called a conspiracy theorist for asking what happened to that boulder. Anyway, that is the first of what I hope is many red pills that don't address the potentiality of something being made up. It merely points out very clear scientific facts as they exist or are presented. Not sure what the next time will be on, but I will definitely use my lantern to shine light on something else.
If I Thank may you. Add a no, bit to the question, because the initial question is, why is nothing happening? I would say ideology has little to do with it, and is more so an act of demoralization. You see, as people are demoralized, you know, we live in a demoralized society where really no one has the drive to do very much. I mean, even you said there, you know, there, everyone talks about revolution, overthrowing the government, but how many people would actually do that? Nobody. And, well, that's a different topic of whether it's a good idea to. The elites can do anything they want. They can turn up the heat to boil the frog dead very quickly, and nobody will jump out of a pot. Nobody will act. So,
you make a fair point. I'd say it's sort of like having a cap on a bottle of soda. You know, picture you have a glass bottle and it's got a little press-on cap to it. The ideology is the cap. If there was a way for people to have an outlet, it would be those people who are very active in the streets. Picture Black Lives Matter, Antifa, the people who stormed the Capitol building, any large number of, not necessarily organizations, but ideologies that do very often actually show up and try to make a change. They're all fighting against each other. They actively hate each other. Imagine if every one of those organizations all at once had invaded the Capitol on January 6th. Do you think the country would be the same right now?
Yes.
If they had a single goal in mind, if literally, because some of these groups show up in numbers in the tens of thousands and burn everything to the ground. You know, everybody's freaking out over January 6th and what happened, but it was literally just a few hundred guys walking in there and walking around while the government sat around crying impotently. I'm not saying anyone should do this, officers. I'm just saying the reason nothing happens is because the people who actually would do something all hate each other. But yes, I'd agree that the glass bottle, the thing that does most of the containing, is the demoralized masses who have lost the ability to actually care or even know what's real anymore.
I think we need to separate the facade from what's really going on, because I think we can both agree that January 6th is just an excuse. It's a TV show. It was just an act so that something, you know,
a large portion of it definitely was, but many of those people obviously were real. The issue I have with January 6th is clearly not everyone was in on it. No matter how much, you know, you have certain people acting, when it comes to, what's the term I'm looking for here? When it comes to a conspiracy, you have to ask the question, how many people could be on a conspiracy before someone was a weak link, before someone leaked a document? Happens all the time. You end up with this very large conspiracy where people have different levels of culpability. Somebody with relatively low culpability but high guilt is what leaks. They think, well, I may not necessarily get the death penalty for this, but I feel like everyone should know. So as a result, every single person within D.C. was obviously not in on it. I myself am within the vicinity of D.C. and could have shown up. I probably wouldn't have gone to the Capitol building, but that would be a personal choice, and I definitely wouldn't have walked in there with my cell phone. But there are people sitting in jail right now who didn't have that thought process. I guarantee you, and I'm a very paranoid person on this, I guarantee you there were hundreds of real people marching in the Capitol. And on the other side, there were plenty of real people, especially many of the security guards, who were not informed that they were supposed to lay down and play dead. Probably a lot of people in the actual government who weren't in on it. People who were genuinely afraid, because everyone's been telling them to be afraid too. Oh, look, the Republicans are coming, even though, unearthed documents show that the government officials knew it was going to happen. Many people left doors open and moved gates out of the way just so they could walk in. It was a coordinated attack by a relatively large number of people, but not coordinated as in, you know, what's the term here? Thinking of the term.
Is it okay if I just interrupt? Because I have
some. Yeah, hold on. My brain. It was a large number of people who shared an idea, but they were funneled in by a small number of people who held the keys. And once that happened, it gave these people all the excuse they needed to crack down on right-wing politics. But that doesn't change the fact that the people who definitely weren't in on it couldn't do anything, because our government as a whole is incompetent. They are outnumbered by us, and they are weaker than us, and they know it. So that's why they need us to believe they are strong, by taking action against people who they know wouldn't have done anything damaging. But yeah, what do you want to say?
I think that we need to step back away from the drama and look more so at what the consequences are. When I look at events such as 9/11, it's more important to look away from the burning buildings, the 200 Americans that died, and look at what actually happened. The destruction of American rights, you know, the complete centralization of American transportation. You can't go on a plane anymore without being searched. You know, the effects of 9/11 are vastly more important than focusing on the event itself. In this perspective, when we look at the January 6th riots, in practice, it really doesn't matter how many people were there, who was actually part of the cabal, if anyone died at all. You know, the specifics really don't matter. If anything, the whole city could have burned, no one could have been burned. The event doesn't matter. The consequences matter.
I agree with you on a lot of that. That is definitely the consequences are the kind of thing you should focus on if you're asking why something happened. So, like, January 6th was partially staged because the people in power wanted an excuse to do the things that they've been doing since then. Just like 9/11 was probably, to some extent, orchestrated by the government, while also, how can I put this? The government almost certainly baited those people into flying those planes into the buildings, because if there wasn't, there would be some kind of effect, someone in that chain, and the Taliban would say, wait, we didn't do that, what the fuck are you talking about? No one ever did that. But I have never in my life heard of an aluminum can punching through solid steel. And knowing that the logistics of the destruction itself make no sense means that you can take a step back and look at the effects and say, like, if I see a damaged portion of a wall, for example, I might not have any idea what happened. But if I look closely at the center of that damaged portion and I see a divot, I might say, something hit the wall right here.
Mm-hmm.
But you might not see that divot if you don't see the effects. You're talking about the effects, the large-scale damage surrounding the divot, where maybe somebody hit the wall with a hammer and the cracks radiated outwards. But if you look real close at the center, you might be able to figure out who did it and how. If you can figure out how, you can prevent it from happening again. So, for example, during the January 6th incident and everything, there was clearly some provocation to do that. There were too many open doors, too many gates moved out of the way, and that's important, because months later, I'm totally sure they were legit people staged a protest in favor of January 6th. No one showed up because everyone realized that it was very clear honeypot. I snuck around and looked at people, and I tell you, every person there was a news reporter or a cop. They were all there to capture the totally real riot that was definitely going to happen. And ever since that happened, everyone's buried it. No one wants to talk about it because it's definitely an incident of the cops trying to set up a drug deal and arresting other cops. That's my point. The fact that they can avoid creating an incident, or rather, falling into a trap that is clearly set up by recognizing how the trap works, is also as important as recognizing the effects from one of those things. Because that way, they can't keep doing it. They can't keep getting away with it. These days, for example, no one could sneak into a building and wire it to explode without someone noticing, because everyone these days has cell phones and TikToks and Twitters and all sorts of shit. And everyone wants those likes, so everyone's become the super curious, look around the corner, record everything kind of people. So if someone was not saying that 9/11 was orchestrated by a bunch of people pretending to be construction workers wiring the building with explosives so that when the plane slammed into it, they could simulate an actual attack, even though it makes no sense that an aluminum plane could smash through two layers of steel beams, the large number of steel beams that surround the core of the building and punch through the other side, before the entire building collapses. But if that was to be the case, they couldn't get away with that now. They'd have to shut down whole city blocks in order to wire a building with no one seeing, and that would be just as conspicuous. Because recognizing how something's done and why it's done are both important. If you only recognize why it's done, you will miss every time it happens because they'll just do something else. If you only recognize how it's done, you'll never see the pattern because you'll never know what the purpose of it is. What I'm saying is, you've got a point. Knowing the effect, knowing what they've taken advantage of, knowing why the event was handled the way it was handled, and why the subsequent results were handled the way they were handled. But anyway, my point of bringing January 6th up was to bring up the fact that most of the people in the country who actually do try to affect change don't cooperate. They actively fight against each other. And that is precisely what the government wants. That is precisely what the oligarchy wants. They don't want you cooperating with other people. Think about Black Lives Matter as a good example. Now, when you hear that, you automatically say, oh, a bunch of fucking, you know, commies wanting to destroy America or whatever, but think about the actual core question behind Black Lives Matter. Should police have unrestricted ability to act in the community against the citizenry? We've all seen the videos. We all know what happens when you tell a thug to drop his weapon. But there is a certain subsection of right-wing Americans, white Americans, who don't like the police getting nosy, getting all up in their business, shooting them. You can take my gun over my dead body kind of deal. They could have met with Black Lives Matter and say, let's address this whole police overreach thing and possibly actually affect the change. I believe that the whole All Lives Matter, Antifa thing was a psyop, deliberately designed to prevent people from realizing that the real enemy was the government.
Well, that as well, but we can't also rule out the influence of E-Slebs in all of these movements as well, because we have right-wing channels that spring up and get massive followings, and they turn out to be no good, and then we have these people in Black Lives Matter that are of a certain persuasion, and they tend to lead the movement to donate to certain countries. You all probably know who those are.
You're not wrong. Like I said, most movements are going to have certain elements that poison them from the inside, even if they're not coordinated in their toxicity. The effect, though, is the same. It's sort of like how no one is homophobic the way black people are homophobic. If that concept makes sense to you. So, you can hear... Weird, I heard of. So, you can... I don't know if you guys have ever seen this, but, you know, gay guy walks across the street, and he's all flaming and everything, and all the white people, even the homophobic white people, will look the other way or look uncomfortable, maybe one of them will yell, faggot. But then, you try doing that same thing in a black neighborhood, and that guy will probably get fucking killed. They are just that homophobic. And yet, for some reason, the people who hate those black guys the most agree with them very strongly on this matter. The same thing is true with the kinds of people who hate police overreach and big government and stuff like that. There's very solidly a black presence and a white presence in them. My opinions on race in this specific instance are irrelevant. Because the main issue we're currently talking about is government overreach. That these kinds of situations could have resulted in a very large movement to remove the authoritarianism from our government, to give us a broader range of freedom. I'd like to point out that at one point this did happen. There was an agreement between groups. When Malcolm X and George Lincoln Rockwell met, they hated each other at first because one was a Nazi and the other one was black. But after talking, they became good friends because they agreed on one thing. White people and black people should not live together. And the only thing they disagreed on is that George Lincoln Rockwell thought they should go to Africa and Malcolm X thought they should be given their own state. They ignored this one distinction, and as a result, there was actually massive pushback against total integration through people who followed either one of the groups, and it was coordinated. And it's no shock that both of them were removed from the picture and replaced with, you know, this whitewashed version of Martin Luther King, who said, oh, we should all live together and, you know, kiss each other and fuck each other's daughters so that we're all one big, pretty fucking family and shit. It's like, even if you hate someone else, if you agree on the hatred, you can still work together, at least to achieve that initial common goal. And that is what the government doesn't want. The government does not want people to work together, even if the people would hate each other. Perfect example. Say you're a libertarian and you believe in free market and all that shit. By definition, you believe that if a group of people left you the fuck alone, they could practice whatever economic system they wanted. And there are plenty of people who like to run little fucking little gay communes off on their own and don't bother anybody. They do it all the time. These two groups could coexist as long as they left each other alone, as long as they had an agreement not to fuck with each other. And then somebody wants to bulldoze the whole forest where these little civilizations exist. Both groups could work together to fight off whoever wants to turn their fucking little paradise into some kind of goddamn mini-mall or some shit. That's not to say that either one of these groups would agree with one of those politics or even like each other. But they both have the same goal in that moment. Ewick, you wanted to say something? I don't know if you're trying to talk. Your thing is flashing a lot, but I'm not hearing anything.
Oh,
that is an issue.
I mean, I
few things to say about the earlier things you had to say. I think that on a broader scale, that there are different forms of the cause of dysfunction in societies. For example, there are different things, different strategies required to destroy black society than what you would use for white people. To destroy black birth rates, materialism is not going to work. They're not going to work themselves to death for a few extra dollars and forget to have kids. That's something that white people do. Materialism will destroy the white birth rate. However, blacks require a different form of societal dysfunction to collapse their societies. And that's what you're looking at in the ghetto. Things have been getting worse, but for different reasons than in white societies. I mean, it's easy to say that Africa has always been like that, and it's always been Africa, if you know what I mean. But
yes.
Yes, we can hear you.
Okay. I was just going to say that that's what made the stock market event that happened not that long ago so powerful.
Yeah, that's fair.
Really, all the, lower Democrats, right? The elite still are the elite and untouchable until we, bought the stock that they were trying to make an infinite number of money by, tanking AMC and GME.
Fair point.
Their ivory tower of money generating, one of them anyway, was put a decent sized crack in it from that. It's amazing. And literally the entire world cheered, except for the elite.
Fair point.
I was finishing up a point about how there are different forms of societal collapse required for both societies. Another thing that I have is why gays are not tolerated in ghettos. Again, different societies tolerate different things, but again, different societies require different forms of collapse.
Yeah, you're completely right about that. Of course, if you introduce two groups to one another and you perform even minor alterations, the societies can create a feedback loop where they crash each other. So, for example, white society has always been the kind that yearns for stability within and conflict from without. We like war, but we don't like war to be in our house. That's part of the reason why lots of European nations tend to form colonies worldwide. By the same token, in African societies, it's sort of every man for himself kind of situation. And it's a might makes right to such an extreme extent. And as a result, it takes very little when you stick those two groups together to cause any kind of conflict. Since if there's any disharmony within a white society, it immediately starts causing major issues. And the number one thing that people from Africa love to do is to cause disharmony. They are obsessed with it. But they see any slight against them as being unjustified, even if it is perfectly justified. Because I'm the mighty person and I killed this guy, so why are you arresting me? I won. And it's like, because you just fucking killed a guy. Their values directly conflict with the values of our society, where you don't just kill someone for offending you. Even when killing people for offending you was a relatively common thing, it was still an agreed-upon situation. I challenge you to a duel. There have been very little tolerance for simply beating a man to death. Even to this day, if someone fucks with you at a bar, even if you're drunk, you still say, let's take this outside or something. It's an invitation to combat. And after fighting, very often you can become friends with the person you were fighting. It doesn't always happen, but it does happen. In black society, losing a fight means that you have to accelerate it until you win. And that's how you end up with situations where somebody walks away from a fight they lost and comes back with a gun. I have not read of any case where where a black guy walked free from a kill because of mutual combating, but I would not be surprised at all. It's a situation where white society as a whole tried to move away from it. We tried to move from that idea that insults should lead to death. But black society doesn't want to abandon those kinds of ideas. They also have no sense of honor. They have the idea that if somebody fucks with you, you gang up on them, no matter what the situation, which is why you see so many of these, World Star videos, where six or seven black guys will gang up on one white dude and beat him senseless, even if the white dude clearly could have won. But they don't care if the white dude could have won. And in fact, that enrages them, because their friends are there, or homies, or whatever. And as a result, people get killed. People die because they looked at someone. The most ridiculous reason I could possibly think to kill a man, they looked at them. But like I said, if these differences were accepted by both groups, they could voluntarily segregate themselves, and they probably would. I don't know what kind of society a well-funded group of Africans would create by themselves, but I wouldn't want to live there. By extension, they wouldn't want to live in my society. They frequently talk about how much they don't want to live in our society, which is ironic considering the fact that even though Africa's right fucking there, dude, no one's stopping you. Just think about it. Every time they go on the news, the TV, they say, well, the police are racist. I'm like, yeah, the police are racist. They don't like black people. Fucking go somewhere. Deal with the fact that the police don't like white people. I mean, they don't like black people. Because you don't like white people either. You never have, you never will. And nothing we ever did matters in that. You don't care that your ancestors were slaves. That's your excuse. And again, the issue there isn't that one person is bad, one person is good. The issue there is that we are too different to live together. But, again, even if we are that different, if we agreed on something in that scenario where it mutually benefited us, there is that possibility we could say, okay, we don't want to live in white society because we have, like, in every situation, we're going to benefit more than you. We're more intelligent and more willing to work hard and more cohesive, and we don't tolerate the kind of things you want to do. By that extension, we don't want to tolerate the kind of shit you want to do. If you want to kill each other, go kill each other. I don't give a flying fuck how prosperous or not prosperous a guy in Zimbabwe is. He can kill all his neighbors or become the richest man alive. I don't care, because it doesn't affect me and mine. But I very much do care what happens to the black guys who live across my street. If I walk out one day and I see they've all been fucking murdered in a drive-by, that upsets me because they brought their culture in my neighborhood. And what if the people who shot them shot the other side of the street by mistake? Where I...
And what if they stick around? What if they want to move into the place they just shot up? Do some dealing there.
How about now? Can you hear me now?
Mm-hmm.
I hear.
You don't have your cool voice thing, though.
Okay, how about now?
Yep. There.
Cool. That is quite literally... That happens, I don't know why. And that is part of the reason that I've been hesitant to use voice mods, because sometimes they'll cut off, and I will have absolutely no warning. So I actually set it up so that if it does cut off, it automatically mutes me. What was I saying?
Something about your mom and faggots or something, I don't know.
Right, yes.
I think Tyler,
actually, no, that's a good point. That's a good point. It brings you back around to the Fagettes, the Fagettos. Because...
Right, that's what I said. Among faggots.
Yeah.
Alright.
So,
Pepperworth.
The difference in societies is an interesting one, because despite the fact that we grew apart tens of thousands of years, virtually every society on Earth agrees on one thing, fuck faggots. The few societies that were like, you know, you hear about this, like, oh, there were two spirits, and they loved trans people and gays and stuff. And you're like, oh, I'd like to point out that those are some of the same societies that practice pulling a heart out through your fucking chest. Like, I'm not going to take it. I'm going to take that with a grain of salt. There were plenty of societies that did embrace certain forms of homosexuality, and in most of those societies, they also embraced all other kinds of fucking homosexuality. The ancient Greeks, you know, oh, was it just what two men did in their fucking bedroom? No, dude, eventually they were fucking children. Like, pretty much always happens, and everyone knows. Every society has documented cases of this. It's not some shit people just fucking made up. They're like, you know, homosexuality dates back to the Greeks, and I'm like, yeah, you mean when they were fucking small boys? Like, there's a grain of salt to take with that, and I think that that's very interesting that even societies where I wouldn't want to live still have that same ideal because of the statistics. Things like 70 to 80% of homosexuals talk about how they were molested as children. And that is an astonishing number because it very much indicates that there's a correlation there. That if you... You know, if a child is molested at an early enough age, it can fuck up their views on sexuality for their life. Then you have, of all child molestations, roughly two-thirds are male-to-male. Of those two-thirds, we're talking about a group making up 1% of the population, maybe 3%. Like, somewhere 1 to 3, but they're accounting for 66% of all child molestation cases. And most homosexuals report having been molested as children. The argument there is, and I'm sure you've seen this around before, homosexuals reproduce by molesting children. I think most of the people who identify on the, quote, LGBTQAAIP spectrum who haven't actually been molested as children are part of a different subculture with fucked up sexualities. The kind of person who has mental illnesses from other causes or whatnot. And if you go on Twitter and you interact with these people, they'll all gladly tell you about all their fucking mental illnesses all fucking day. That's all they fucking talk about. Well, I'm actually disabled because I got this, that, and the other thing, and depression and psychosis, and I want to cut myself, but it's not, and it's not okay to cut yourself unless it's your dick. If it's your dick, cut it right off. And I don't give a fuck what anybody says.
I don't know why we're going on about fags for like 10 minutes when all you need to say is these people are dysfunctional or mentally insane at best. I mean, what more is there to say than this is just dysfunctional and should be prevented at almost every stage?
You're completely right. But
there is some to say because they are taking over more and more. Because we have a whole month where our TV stations everywhere dedicate airtime to promote them.
Is that really a cause of their own work or the...
Of course it's not their own work, but it's still...
It's a combination of factors. If you catch someone of the homosexual variety or transgender early enough and you treat it as a mental illness, there is a success rate. Too many people treat it like a personal failing, and too many people treat it like it's perfectly normal, and it's neither of these. Obviously, molesting children is bad, and those people should be ground up into a fine pink powder. But if you catch someone who's in their, you know, late teens, early 20s, and they're homosexual, treatments with antipsychotics have been successful. Therapy has been successful, not, you know, electroconversion therapy, which again is treating it like a failing, and that automatically makes them want to resist and try to say there's nothing wrong with me or whatever. And it's like, no, there's something wrong with you. It's a mental illness. Treating mental illnesses this way is functional. It works. If you give a trans person antipsychotics, most of the time it will prevent them from wanting to transition. It will literally make them stop wanting to put on dresses and shit.
I will say that at some level it is mental illness. So you can just do that for trannies, that you just give them antipsychotics and they'll just stop being trannies. But at some level, there is a measure of spiritual rot happening, not only in society, but in individuals. Some people just refuse to accept objective morality. A lot of people, actually I would say a lot of people, would rather have a subjective morality where they can choose themselves what is right and wrong. And this allows them to, you know what, maybe fucking children isn't the worst thing ever sort of ideology. This sort of way of thinking where they can justify their own evil. So you can have homosexuals, you can have transgenders, you can have pedophiles in this subjective morality, because the great rot is that people would like to choose their own good and evil.
Moral relativism, yeah.
Exactly.
And you're completely right about that. When everybody is allowed to do everything's okay as long as you feel comfortable with it, the problem is, as you pointed out, everyone will start choosing all sorts of fucked up shit. And you'll enter, I don't know if you guys have taken a deep dive on Twitter, but you'll find circles of people who argue for progressively worse and worse things spiraling around each other, and then you'll find people who look deeper into this well, even though they're a part of it, like the less flamboyant gays. We'll look down the well and see people talking about how molesting children should be fine. We'll say, that's horrible, why would you allow that? And it's like, that is exactly what we said was going to happen. When gay people were arguing, oh, we should have all the rights and we just want this, that, and the other thing, and you give it to them. And what happens a few years later? You end up with fucking 10-year-old boys in trans in drag shows and movies like Cuties coming out, and all the liberals are like, wow, it's so progressive. And it's like, I just want to take those people and put them in a fucking blender, man, because
The thing is, these things will always exist so long as people reject objective morality. I would say that Christianity is the only solution, especially for this reason. You know.
But they don't reject objective morality, and they don't pick their own morality. They all choose the same morality.
No.
If they were each choosing their own subjective morality, you'd see a bunch of meaningfully different moral choices. And you see some small variations, but it's utterly tiny variations. They all agree on the same few basic moral points, that the only evils are causing pain to some other person and oppression, specifically a class-based oppression based upon certain protected classes. So they all come to the conclusion that any sexual preference that you can possibly identify is a protected class of people, and that their sexual preference is essential to their identity, and that you're oppressing them by not allowing them to express themselves. And so that's how you get more and more and more and more insane morality. And I don't think it's subjective at all, or it's the application of certain neo-Marxist and French existentialist principles that you see in philosophy going back to the 1950s now being taken out in practice to its logical conclusion. They're just doing what the universities have taught them, what their ideologies have told them, and nothing else.
I think that actually what you say is actually agreeing with me, because what you do see is a difference in what sorts of vice and sin people choose. You actually do see differences. Even what the other man said, that less flamboyant gays look down upon those who are outright pedophiles. There are furries in this world that look down upon other furries that are more degenerate than themselves. People choose their own vices, and they will look down upon the vices of other people. So, yes, people do choose their own morality, their own evil.
I'd say, Lotus, okay, you got like a thing going on, and I can hear that grinding noise.
Static, yeah.
So, the point isn't that everybody would just choose their own rainbow morality. The point is that they believe they are choosing their own morality. They believe that what they feel is right is what's right kind of deal. No one's telling them what to do in their opinion. Obviously, from the outside looking in, you can see they're all being told to believe the same thing, especially when, as these sort of progressive circles form, people are beaten into submission in ways that conservatives would like. It's downright upsetting, the difference, because if I'm in a classical southern suburb with a conservative family, and I come in there with a piercing one day, like I'm 19, I come in with a piercing, I'm like, I like piercings, and my family doesn't believe in piercings or tattoos or that kind of thing. The vast majority of conservative families will just talk my ear off about why that's, you know, you just damaged your body for life or whatever. But if you say the wrong phrasing of something to agree with somebody in these liberal hyper-gay circles, they will actually you and accuse you of being a Nazi or some shit. And to a point that it definitely causes some psychological damage to already psychologically damaged people who want nothing more than to be accepted. So when they're in the circle, they are forced to conform, and yet still somehow believe that they have chosen their own morality.
It's kind of interesting, actually, because what it appears to me to be happening is they're getting worse, but not really because they want it to get worse, but because their worldview that they chose to believe is being shown to them pretty much right in their face that it was all wrong to begin with. And they're kind of breaking down in kind of weird ways because it was shown them that it was completely wrong.
In many ways, I completely agree with you.
I mean, not necessarily all of them, but a lot of them at the, I would say, plebeian, you know, lower level people, right? Not, you know, people who have lots of money, right? That's a different tier in itself.
The average gay person in the 1980s had an obscene number of sexual partners, often measuring in the hundreds. The blame for this is very commonly these days attributed, well, people who were more open about their sexuality in general were more willing to be who they were in the face of bigotry. And yet today, decades later, you see that people in this queer community are just as likely to have a large number of sexual partners, just as likely to engage in the same risky behaviors that 40 years ago were wiping them out. They blame anyone but themselves while still adhering to the same overall principles. And the fact of the matter is that you're not just talking about someone who has a slightly different belief. If I knew two guys, say we live in an ideal world, but I've never heard of gay people. If I knew two guys down the street who weren't married, lived together, but were otherwise just two dudes living together. If there was nothing else there, I would never, ever, ever give a shit. Ever. I would just assume they were roommates and best friends or whatever, and maybe they just snuck some poon in on the weekends or some shit. I don't fucking know. I would never give a shit, but they never, ever behave that way. They never, ever do that. Even the ones who are crypto fags are usually crypto fags because they know they just move somewhere where that is not fucking tolerated. As soon as they think that they can get away with it, they would immediately start doing something else. Immediately start hanging up their little rainbow flags. Immediately start demanding better representation. It's like, you have your representation. There are two of you in a town of 10,000 and five people on the fucking city council. That is your representation. That there is no one on the council's gay, because statistically there's no one in the town who's gay. They won't demand more and more representation until they are vastly overrepresented, because they, in their mental illness, believe the world is against them. And that, ironically, is what turns everyone against them. People can't stand that sort of behavior. They can't stand someone being constantly the victim and then, as a result, becoming the bad guy against a perceived pursuer. As the Bible says, the wicked flee where no man pursueth. So even in the situations where you have someone be like, well, what two men do in the safety of their own home is their business, they don't just do it in the privacy of their own home. They make it everyone's fucking problem. And then they go out fucking with 50 goddamn partners, contracting diseases, breeding whole new ones. And these are the exact same people who today are trying to tell you to take the fucking COVID vaccine. They're like, well, we know what happens when a pandemic goes untreated. And it's like, we're the ones who could have told you that was going to happen, but you didn't want to listen to us because we're just old fuddy-duddy Christians. I'm not a Christian myself, but that is definitely a consideration that when gay people were decriminalized decades ago, just before the AIDS epidemic in many places, you ended up with people just going out and fucking as many people as they possibly could. And yes, they make problems that they could have completely avoided. And as a result, it creates those very enemies. Those people who otherwise might not have given a shit that two people are gay see the damaging effects that their behavior has about surrounding people who aren't even involved. Some bisexual dude joins a gay orgy, catches AIDS, and now has sex with women, and now you've got AIDS in the fucking straight population too. You know, degeneracy should have a limited number, degeneracy shouldn't be tolerated, but when you have a limited number of sexual partners as straight people, even straight people who are very promiscuous have significantly fewer partners than the average gay person. And yet, we still often encounter that very issue. In California, they just decriminalize giving someone AIDS on purpose without telling them. No longer a crime. And as a result, you literally have... The reason is because they said it was homophobic. It is homophobic, apparently, to require people to not murder you. So if a gay guy or bisexual decides to fuck a woman who, let's just put a scenario out here. Maybe she's young and she doesn't know any better and she has sex with a guy and she feels bad afterwards and, you know, she becomes, you know, traditional and she turns her life around and then a couple years later, maybe right after she meets her future husband or whatever, she finds out she has AIDS. And she's accidentally spread it to her husband. She had no idea. HIV in some people can take years before it manifests symptoms. And as a result, the guy who just gave her AIDS, knowing he was giving her AIDS, is now responsible for both their deaths.
Yeah, they can donate blood too, and I'm pretty sure they made it illegal to label it as such.
Yeah. They can donate blood. It cannot be labeled, and it is virtually impossible to filter out the, you can't guarantee that AIDS viruses can be completely filtered out, because when you donate blood, the cells themselves, even if you do separate out free virus particles, the cells themselves can be infected, and it can take a couple of days before a white blood cell that's infected bursts and releases new cells. If all it takes is a single white blood cell, which they do not separate out when they donate blood, a single white blood cell that is accidentally injected in and happens to have AIDS viruses inside, you really are looking at a potential... I mean, can you even imagine that? Getting your life saved by, you know, a doctor and later on realizing you get... Because this used to happen. There's a reason gay people were banned from donating blood, because people used to get AIDS from blood transmission. But then, you know, that shit was all covered up.
Only in California.
Tell me.
For now?
Oh, no, I'm just
California,
saying.
California is the... number one state in the union to cause problems for everyone else. I can't tell you how many people are constantly trying to, oh man, you should go to California, live in California. And it's like, I would rather be dead. If I was threatened with an insane fine or contract or whatever, like, you go to California or you're going to own your ass for life. I guess you fucking own me. I am not moving to California. You sue me for $1 million, I don't give a fuck. I ain't moving to fucking California. There are some levels of degeneracy I am not willing to think to. Okay?
I mean, it wouldn't be bad if you didn't have to pay any California taxes for anything. Somehow.
There's nothing good about California. But anyway... been talking for over an hour and a half now.
This really is the same thing with the feds, though. You know, they're literally paying journalists to tell you and, you know, whoever, whatever kids, that all that is just as fine, right?
Yeah.
I have something to say. Why do you have something to say?
I don't want to interrupt, but are we going to try and watch the movie, or are we going to just call it a day?
Oh, do we have a movie to watch?
We were going to try and get the G5 movie to pull up, since I don't think everyone has seen it yet, but I don't know if we can get that to work or not. We're going to try.
To be frank, I watched half the movie, and it is extremely cringe, but I'll watch it.
It's... worth watching with friends and Long Island iced tea.
Okay, I will say we should be able to interrupt because seriously is it's not a story that is worth paying attention to.
I would just kind of agree. It's kind of a B movie to, throw popcorn at the screen and make obnoxious comments randomly throughout. There are a lot, there's a number of fun spots, but,
yeah,
there's a lot that isn't.
Yeah, I think we should finish up whatever we're talking about, and whoever's streaming right now should pull up the movie, we all grab our popcorn, we'll set up.
Yeah.
But, didn't I have something to say? Yeah. Morality, like many things, is based on feelings. When people pick their morality, they claim it is objective, but in reality, it is their own base desires that lead them. So, when people are fags and they say being gay is okay, they don't say it as a... they claim it's a logical act. That's a lie. People can claim that this or that is logical. It never is. A lot with ideology like that. Many ideologies are based on that sort of thinking, that justification of their base desires is logical, but it usually isn't. What else?
I'm pretty much done with it. We can move on to the movie.
You know what?
I'm going to step out. I need to grab something from the store. I'll be back. But you guys go ahead and start without me.
Okay, that's good. We can start without you. Let me just see if I can get in there.
I'm going to take a shower really quick.
Ooh.
And wet mane tie wick. I think I will make a Long Island iced tea. That sounds good. Anyway, shower. Oh,
make later. What you want, buddy.